Now, America's birth rate continues to fall. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 3.8 million babies were born last year. That's down 2% from 2016 and the lowest recorded number of births in 30 years. In addition, birth rates generally decline for women under 40, reaching record lows among women in their 20s. However, the birth rate for women in their early 40s actually went up. The report has some demographers wondering whether the downward trend is going to continue and what that could mean for the country's economic future. And by the way, according to the post-World War II figures from the state, Wisconsin's birth rate has followed national trends at a slightly lower clip. So why are people having fewer kids, or at least delaying childbirth? Karen Benjamin-Guzzo is an associate professor of sociology at Bowling Green State University. She's also the associate director there of the Center for Family and Demographic Research. Karen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Well, I think the question people ask when they see numbers like this, record lows, 30-year lows in numbers of births, is why? What's going on?
Well, I think that despite the sort of uptick in the economy and the downturn in unemployment, that we have this overall picture that things are going well. But I think for individuals, especially those in their prime childbearing years, the ones we call millennials, they're not feeling that certain about things. They're not feeling that recovery that we're supposedly having. And so people feel really uncertain. And when you're uncertain about your future and what the next couple of years hold for you, I think you're unlikely to say, gee, now's a good time to have kids. So people, I think, are generally kind of delaying until later. So if you're in your 20s in particular, you think, okay, well, I've still got my 30s. I can do this later. And so it's those in their late 30s and 40s, there's no later for them. So they're less likely to be delaying, although births are down for those 35-year-olds and to 40-year-olds. But I think people are just really feeling uncertain about their futures, and so they're putting off having kids. I don't think people are saying, I don't want to have kids at all. They're saying, not now. And unfortunately, they've been feeling that way now for about 10 years.
Do we often see birth rates tracking with economic certainty or uncertainty?
Yes. Generally, when the economy is bad and there's uncertainty, people delay having kids, birth rates go down. There's even a little bit of evidence that uncertainty actually starts to predict these downturns in the economy, that birth rates actually start to go down a little before the economy starts to go bad. So there is some concern that maybe this is maybe an indicator of another, you know, back down into another recession. That one, I hope, is not true.
Is there a kind of a hangover effect where, okay, we had these millennials coming into the workforce at, you know, a really bad time, the Great Recession, 2008, that few years there. As a result, they weren't making money then. They weren't able to pay off student loans. They weren't able to buy houses. Like, they had this economic setback that they're still feeling now. Even if they've got the good job now, they're still trying to catch up with what happened 10 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So today's young adults, those in their 20s and early 30s, they still have this crushing student loan debt. Many of them spent a lot of years being unemployed or underemployed, going back to school, trying to work and go to school. They haven't been able to afford a house. So we still have record high levels of parental co-residence, you know, young adults living with their parents. That it makes you sort of wary of, you know, really saying, all right, I'm an adult, I'm stable, I'm ready to, you know, take that next step, because taking, you know, becoming a parent's pretty irreversible. And so I think people do have this kind of hangover effect where they're just not that certain. And even those who on paper look like they're doing pretty well now, it wasn't that long ago that things were uncertain. And I think right now in our kind of political situation, I think people still feel like there's a lot that could go wrong very quickly, and just are not feeling that confident in the short-term future.
Karen Benjamin-Guzzo is with us from Bowling Green State University, sociologist there, associate director of the Center for Family and Demographic Research, talking about America's declining birth rate, declining fertility rate. Karen, what are the consequences if we have this prolonged decline in the number of births? What kind of things do we watch for down the road?
Well, sort of the big consequence that we worry about is what demographers call the aging of the population. If fewer young people are being born, then our average age gets older and older, and we worry about at what point do we not have enough young adults and future generations coming through to be able to support the older generations to pay into Social Security and Medicare. And so we worry about that. We want to make sure we have enough people to work, you know, to fuel our workforce. So the U.S. is a little unique compared to some of our developed country peers in that we're actually tracking what everyone else is doing in terms of birth rates. They're going down for everybody. But we have immigration that actually props up our workforce and keeps our population fairly stable overall in size. So if immigration turns down and we can't get these births to kind of go back up, we do have some real problems that we're going to have to face, both in terms of decisions about, you know, Social Security and other programs like that, but also as an economy, you know, who's going to work in our jobs?
I wanted to ask about developed countries in general. As you mentioned, we see declining birth rates in a lot of countries. Maybe it goes up and down a little bit depending on the economy. But is there this overall trend as economies get more and more developed in the modern era, birth rates go down?
Yes, that is definitely the case. I mean, the U.S. is, I think, probably a more pro-family country, pro-child country than a lot of our peers are. But that's generally the case, that as we get more educated as a population, and that particularly includes women. Women are getting more educated. Women's labor force is rising, or at least has been overall rising over the past 50 years, that women are working. And we as a society, and a lot of the other developed countries as well, don't make it really easy for women and for couples to have, you know, sort of this dual family or dual employment situation and to raise a family. We don't have paid maternity leave. We don't have good child care. It's really expensive. And so countries tend to have higher fertility, higher birth rates if they can help support families and help people still keep working. But when that doesn't happen, we do see that birth rates go down. And they're really hard to recover once if we go too far down this path. So places like Japan, for instance, are having a really tough time getting people to have more kids.
With something as huge a trend as demographics, are there examples of countries moving the needle saying, hey, we're a developed country, our birth rate is going down, we're worried about this, we change policies, and then it actually does move the needle?
Yeah, it's rarely sort of a single policy. But the Scandinavian countries are the ones that we tend to, as demographers, look towards as good examples of keeping fertility rates pretty stable, because they have some really generous maternity leave policies, but also paternity leave and general parental leave. They offer free child care. They do pay higher taxes for all this, but their economies are more stable, and so are their birth rates and their populations. People are happier. Parents are better off. They stay together longer. They both parents are more involved. They have much higher rates of father involvement, in part because the expectation is that dads will take time off, dads will help out. So they are, you know, there are policies that do it, but it's this sort of global, or not global, but I mean kind of a large spread effort to say we've got to make it easier for people and families to both work and raise a family, and we need to prioritize families and children. And the U.S. has not done that.
We're talking to Karen Benjamin-Guzzo. She's an associate professor of sociology at Bowling Green State University, associate director of the Center for Family and Demographic Research. We're talking about the record low birth rate for the United States and what it might mean for America's economic future. You can join in at 800-642-1234, especially if you are part of this story. Are you in that childbearing age where people commonly have kids, 20s, 30s? Are you one of the families that had one of those 3.8 million kids last year? Have you decided to hold off on having kids for a while, forever, till things settle down? Do you feel that pressure that Karen was talking about earlier? You don't feel economically settled enough to have kids right now, maybe down the road. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. We continue our discussion about the U.S. birth rate hitting a record low in 2017. 3.8 million babies were born last year, down 2% from the previous year. Lowest number in 30 years, lowest rate, as I understand it, since we started keeping track of such things. Karen Benjamin-Guzzo is an associate professor of sociology at Bowling Green State University, associate director of the Center for Family and Demographic Research. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you putting off having kids, opting to have no kids? Why? Why not? Maybe fewer children than perhaps you planned, or more. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Karen, before we go to our callers, I don't know if this new CDC data tells us this story, but do we know, is this families deciding to have no children versus one or two? Is this families deciding to have one or two instead of three or four? Do we know how that all plays out?
That's a great question, and that's really, I think, an important part of the story. So from this report, we can't tell that, but we have earlier reports where it's more complete information. And what seems to be the case is people are delaying having that first kid, but they're also actually putting off having maybe a second or third, or they're choosing to just have one child or only to have two. And again, what tends to happen is a lot of times people don't know what they're getting into with one in terms of some of the costs or how difficult it is to work and do other things. And so they have one child and they realize, oh, my goodness, I can't afford to have another kid in daycare. Or suddenly my house is much smaller than I needed. Or I need to, you know, do I want to raise a kid in this neighborhood? Should I move to the suburbs or do I need a different school system? And so I think people are thinking maybe also about having fewer children than they maybe perhaps originally wanted.
Let's bring our callers on now. Tyler is with us in La Crosse. Tyler, hi.
Hi there.
What do you want to bring up, Tyler?
Yeah, so my question for your caller is I'm curious of, you know, what the data is on contraceptive availability in youth and young people and how that's kind of affected the birth rate. I work in healthcare, and it seems like almost every woman of childbearing age that I come across is on some form of oral contraceptive or some implantable device.
Tyler, thanks for the call. Karen, do we know, is contraceptive use like that moving the needle on fertility?
Absolutely. So one of the big things that we're happy about in the reproductive field is that we are seeing a lot fewer teen births and unintended or unplanned pregnancies and births. And that is because people are using contraception more and they're using better methods. So with the Affordable Care Act, that has really expanded the ability for people, for young women in particular, to be able to afford the most effective kinds of methods and to be able to access those. And so the increased usage is probably part of that story of why we're seeing fewer births, and particularly among the biggest decline is really among teens and young adults, those in the early 20s, and it's probably because they're finally being able to access and use the most effective methods of contraception.
Tyler, thanks for the call. We have Kurt with us now in Appleton. Kurt, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, I guess my view on that is I don't think it's necessarily a referendum of how you feel about the economy or anything else. When I was in those prime years to have children, we simply chose not to have children, just from a standpoint of, where all these jobs come from as we become less industrialized and less agrarian. You know, what's the impact on the economy, where there's a certain ceiling on what the sustainable population to have. And I don't think it's a bad idea to simply opt out of increasing that population.
Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, Karen, how much is there out there of people making that conscious decision, not I'm not going to have kids now because I can't afford it, but has it gotten more acceptable for people to say, you know what, I, for various reasons, just don't want to have kids, period?
Yeah, absolutely. That there is a growing acceptability of simply choosing not to have children. We call that voluntarily childless. And that's absolutely the case that's also growing. Although that has, in general, that I don't think that plays a big part in it. Because just there are some groups, and we are seeing that more married couples choosing not to have kids, but we're seeing more unwed mothers and never married mothers or never married individuals choosing to have kids outside of marriage. So that's sort of balancing out. It used to be that if you didn't marry, you didn't have the chance. And now that's not necessarily the case. But there are people who are saying to themselves, you know, I don't think that's what I want for whatever reason. Having children is not something in my, you know, that interests me or something I think is a good idea. But that number, the proportion of women who never have kids seems to actually have gone down a little bit since its peak in the kind of the 1990s and early 2000s. Oh, actually, it peaked during the Depression, but in recent years, the proportion of women who never have kids has actually gone down a bit. I think because we are seeing more people trying to make it work, trying to have both a career and family.
Kurt, thanks for the call. Jackie is with us now in Madison. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I heard you guys talking, so I wanted to call in. I just turned 40 last year and had my fifth baby 4 months ago, and I was pregnant with my third and fourth children. I have twins when I was just finishing up my master's degree. So I think for me and my husband, we've been together a very long time and just decided that, you know, we needed to focus on school before we had kids. And so I was in my early 30s before we even had our first child. But really, I mean, trying to do all of it, you know, try to have the career, but we also wanted to have the family was really important for us too. And especially with the cost of having kids, I mean, having a education can definitely contribute to our family size.
Jackie, thanks a lot for the call. In our last few moments, Karen, that was a family waited till their 30s, then now on their fifth kid. Is that something we're seeing? People do have kids, but they start later, 10 years later maybe than they used to?
Absolutely. The average age at first parenthood or having that first kid has definitely creeped up. And we are seeing birth rates still increasing for women in their late 30s, maybe not in the most recent year, but definitely still increasing for those in their 40s. So there is, it can't keep going forever, but it does seem that people are delaying, but they're not necessarily forgoing it. Now, if you don't start having kids till you're 35 or even 40, it's going to be tough for you to have five kids at that point. But it's definitely the case that just because you haven't had kids by 30 or even 35 doesn't mean you're not necessarily ever going to have children.
And just briefly, Karen, I know this is hard to predict. It's based on millions of individual decisions. Do you expect the fertility rate to keep going down from year to year?
I don't think so. I think in the next couple of years we might see maybe a little more decline. I do think it eventually will level off, that we'll kind of remain at this around two, give or take, you know, two kids per person on average. That tends to be what we need to keep a population going, and so I'm not entirely pessimistic yet.
Karen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Karen Benjamin-Guzzo, Associate Professor of Sociology at Bowling Green State University, also the Associate Director of the Center for Family and Demographic Research. We talked with her about the record low U.S. birth rate. It may be months before a cause is determined for the medical helicopter crash that killed three crew members in northern Wisconsin. But as Glenn Moberg reports, at least one experienced observer is questioning whether single-engine helicopters like the one that crashed should be used for medical transport.
1,200 people, many of them paramedics, filled Holy Family Church to pay their respects to the Ascension Spirit crew, pilot Rico Caruso, flight nurse Clint Mitchell, and flight medic Greg Rosenthal. The service was attended by Clint Mitchell's fiancée and his new baby, born less than 8 hours before.
I love my job. Those were the last words I heard from Clint.
Matt Thompson, EMS Outreach Coordinator for Spirit, knew them all. He says Greg Rosenthal was highly trained.
He was the rock, knew how to handle every situation.
Rico Caruso had logged more than 3,200 flight hours before the fatal crash.
Rico was one of the most respected pilots, not only in our area, but nationally.
Thompson says all three excelled at a very difficult job.
They are working with the patient from the time they lift to the time that they deliver that patient. They're experts in what they do, and they prepare for all scenarios. Our team was as good as it gets.
The Ascension Spirit flight went down in clear skies the night of April 26 in Hazelhurst. The National Transportation Safety Board says the single-engine Eurocopter AS-350 underwent an extensive safety examination the day before, but there is at least one observer who thinks that helicopter shouldn't have been flying. Dr. Michael Abernathy is the chief flight physician of UW Health MedFlight in Madison.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a physician in the United States who has spent more time in the back of a helicopter caring for patients. I've been doing it for almost 30 years.
Like Ascension Spirit, UW MedFlight uses helicopters and pilots provided by the Air Methods Company. Abernathy says they do an excellent job, but both of the MedFlight helicopters are twin-engine models. Abernathy says single-engine helicopters, like the Eurocopter that crashed, shouldn't be used for medical transport.
Redundancy. In the event of an engine failure, you still have a second engine. If you go to the rest of the developed world, no one uses small single-engine helicopters. No one.
Abernathy says of the roughly 1,000 medical helicopters in the U.S., 16% of them are single-engine Eurocopters or similar models, but they have been involved in 55% of the 27 fatal accidents since 2009.
I personally would never work on one, knowing what I know.
In a statement drafted for WPR, Air Methods says, quote, as a result of our strong safety culture, stringent inspection and maintenance programs, and compliance with several audit programs, we have found the reliability rate of single-engine helicopters is nearly identical to twin-engine helicopters. Additionally, the single-engine helicopters used in our fleet today are equipped with the same essential safety equipment found on larger twin-engine helicopters, end quote. The Ascension Spirit and Air Methods program had to meet standards set by the Commission on Accreditation of Medical Transport Systems. Dudley Smith is the Associate Executive Director.
Programs are required to have a safety management system, and then there's also standards in there about what kinds of equipment and things need to be on the vehicles. We're doing everything we can to decrease the likelihood of accidents happening.
At the memorial service, no one questioned the commitment of Ascension Spirit and Air Methods to safety. Vince Freeborn of Air Methods said the teams were eager to get back in the sky.
We're going to be here to stand Spirit 2 back up. And we're going to stand Spirit 2 back up in the honor of Rico, Clint, and Greg.
Six medical helicopters flew in formation overhead, a show of support from across Wisconsin. Inside the church, the last call went out from dispatch.
Pilot Rico Caruso, Flight Nurse Clint Mitchell, and Flight Medic Greg Rosenthal. Godspeed to Heaven's Open Door. Spirit Communication Center, clear.
The cause of the crash is still under investigation. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, there's been a series of new lawsuits over sexual harassment in the fast food industry. We'll find out how ongoing harassment issues are affecting some of the country's lowest paid workers. Oil prices are moving up as we head into a big driving weekend. An industry analyst gives us the latest news and forecasts and what kind of prices we might see at the pump over the summer months. And on this week's edition of Food Friday, two Wisconsin farmers give us the lowdown on making the best use of fresh seasonal produce. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.